This edition of Meet the Writers was first broadcast on the 16th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to Meet the Writers with me, Georgina Godwin. My guest today is a Turkish journalist, campaigner and author. He's Ahmet Altan, and for the next 30 minutes we find out about his life and his work right here on Monocle 24. Do stay tuned. Ahmet Altan is one of Turkey's most significant authors and journalists. Born in 1950, Ahmet graduated from the economics department of Istanbul University. At 24, he became a journalist. He worked in many positions from reporter to editor-in-chief, including of the liberal paper Taraf, which he also founded. He's been a TV news producer and presenter. He's written 9 novels, including 3 bestsellers, winning several literary prizes, plus awards for championing press freedom. Well, one of his novels, a thriller entitled Endgame, has been published in English for the first time. It's an existential thriller about human desire and ambition. I have to tell you before we even start talking to him how fabulous it is. Think noir, but not in a Scandi way. It's its very own unique form of noir. It's had all sorts of glowing references, including from DBC Pierre, who says, if Steinbeck had written The Godfather, it might have read like this. It gives me enormous pleasure to have Ahmet Altan in the studio, not only for this book, Ahmet, but because of your amazing history in championing press freedom.
Thank you, Georgina. Your entrance is marvelous, you know. My past, my background, my history. It's not very important one, but my father is a very well-known Turkish writer, leftist one. He was jailed when he was 40, I think, because of being communist. And he really had impressed a generation of Turkey. Then I started to work as journalist when I was 24.
Your career is a sort of history of being fired, really,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, yes. I've been fired a lot of times. I do not count them. I don't know the number, you know. But when they say, or someone says, you must not do that, or you must do that, I don't like that sentences. So I said, no. Then they fire me. It's fair for both of us.
Take me through some of those jobs.
Okay. When I was writing for Milliyet, a Turkish newspaper, I wrote an article which was called Atatürk. You know, our well-known leader was Atatürk. Atatürk means father of the Turks. And I wrote an article calling father of the Kurds. And it was very simple article, just putting the situation topsy-turvy, you know, put the Kurds in the shoes of Turks and to put the Turks in the shoes of Kurds and asking Turks, what would you do if someone does this kind of things to you? So generals are, we have generals, you know, military. They were very angry and they called up the boss of the newspaper, and I think in 24 hours they fired me. Then it caused a little trouble in the media.
I mean, you've got something like 200 court cases against you.
Yes, nearly 200, I think. But my father had 300 court cases. And yes, in Turkey, it's okay. It's not something very surprising or shocking. Now I'm
in a democracy.
I'm seeing your face now. You are shocked, and you know. No, in a democracy, we do not have democracy in Turkey. We have never had one day in our history with democracy. No, Turks do not know what democracy is. We know the word, we can describe it, but we haven't experienced it. We do not know what democracy is. So, yes, you are shocked, and I'm not. I've seen my father. I saw him. He used to go nearly every morning to the court before he went to paper to write his article. So then I went.
You got into trouble again writing about the Turkish-Armenian genocide.
Yes, because the word genocide was and still is a taboo in Turkey. Ordinary Turk does not know anything about Armenian genocide because they do not read it in school. In our official history, there is no genocide. On the contrary, Armenians killed Turks. I wrote about that, and I wrote that it must be called genocide. Maybe it's against the description of law, because some lawyers told me like that. There's official description of genocide. But I think if you kill some people just because of her or his race, it's genocide. Mm.
Yeah. You must have been very pleased then when the Pope came out recently and used that language.
Not only Pope, I do not want someone to accept it. I want Turks understand the situation that our ancestors killed the Armenians. They were children, women, old people. They didn't know why they were killed. They were killed just because they were Armenians. And I call it genocide, yes. So I wrote it, and I even put an headline on the newspaper, a big headline. I said, genocide.
Now, you actually founded a newspaper, and you were the editor of a paper that Julian Assange described. The paper was Taraf, the bravest newspaper in Turkey. Tell me about setting up that publication.
In Turkey, before Taraf, the media, the journalists, didn't dare publish anything about military. I hate the coups. I hate the generals who involved in coups. I saw they arrested my father in Dawn. I saw them raided people's houses. I know they killed youngsters. They tortured people. I hate them. And we published documents about military. And the ordinary Turks, in a way, saw the real face of the military, what they did, what they tried to do, how they killed people, how they tortured people. So I think it has changed the political climate in a way. Then, military went back to their barracks. Mm-hmm. I think Taraf has helped in a way to that result.
Now, the paper continues, but you left there once again with a storm of controversy.
Yeah, I left it. It was, I don't think it was because of politics, but I'm old and in a way, I'm a guy, it's hard to carry, I was older than the boss of the newspaper. He was a kind of son to me, but I can get easily angry, old. And so I don't blame him that he couldn't carry me. It wasn't that easy. I know myself. So, in a way, I was fired from the newspaper I founded. But it was okay because for 5 years, I couldn't write a sentence of any novel. And really, once I said, journalism is a kind of marriage for me, but the real love is literature. I wouldn't have been journalist if I am not Turk. The situation in Turkey forces you to involve in journalism, and you waste your time. If you are a novelist, yes, you waste your time. Every minute that you do not write your novel is a wasted time for you.
Do you think then, I mean, you've talked about how Turkey isn't a democracy. We know that you've had all these court cases against you. But there does seem to be a certain amount of freedom of expression and freedom of the press. You have been able to put programs like that out. You have been able to write things under huge headlines saying genocide.
If you risk, you can say. And I have to admit that my father is a very well-known writer, first of all. My family, we are... we belong to the establishment.
Now, your brother's written 25 books.
My brother's very well known, and my grandfather was a pasha, general, who fought with Atatürk. So if you come from establishment, it's always easier to do something like that. I have to admit that, you know, if someone else would have tried that, maybe the situation be different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my family is past. My father's name, my brother's name, it might protect me. So I wrote and told everything I thought. Yeah, I can say that. Once, editor-in-chief of a newspaper, I was writing an article, called me up and he said, can we come together? I must talk to you. And he said, step back, Ahmet. You are very hard. And I said, you'd better step back. Because if I write, there's a hidden promise that I would write everything I think. If I cannot write, or if I do not write what I think, it's a cheat. And I don't take it. I can cheat, not when I'm writing something.
What about your personal safety? I read somewhere, admittedly it was Wikipedia, that you always carry, carry a gun.
I don't know why they wrote it.
I'm sure because it's great protection because everybody assumes you're armed.
Yeah, yeah. I've been carrying a gun, yes. But 2 months ago, police came and confiscated my weapons. And now I'm armless. In England and in Turkey.
when you look around, when you look at Erdogan's government, when you look at what's happening in your country, can what you have done and what others do in the same vein change it?
I think it works because, yes, you can change something in Turkey. Because just suppose a dark room. If you put a match, only one match, is enough to be seen. But in a daytime, in a white, you know, open sunny day, even a huge lamps cannot illuminate anything. Turkey is a kind of dark room. So one match, a small match, is always important because it's seen. It is seen. If the others stop to talk, then only one voice is enough to be one match in a dark room. So it's important. Even one pupil, even one article, even one interview is very important in Turkey. You can change the climate. You can tear up that fear the society feels. So it's important. Yeah, it works, I think.
You've written 9 books, I think 3 of those bestsellers, and for the very first time, one of them's been translated into English. This novel, I want to call it noir, Turkish noir, really. How would you describe it?
I don't know. I'm not good putting names on something in literature, you know. I like that book. First of all, the idea of truth seems very interesting to me. You cannot know pupil, you cannot the real, genuine face of the pupil. In life, life itself hides pupil from seeing each other. But only in literature, you can see the real faces, the real souls of the human beings. And especially for women, they don't show the whole part of themselves. We know what they have, but we cannot tell it in life. They are very ladylike on the streets, at the dinner, somewhere, at work. But we know that they are not that ladylike always. But you cannot say it in the life and you cannot see it in the life. But literature shows a human being with every aspect of him or her. then you can see the reality. And I like to tell that kind of reality. Mm. I like to write about women because they are more hidden than men. Men are men. They're very simple, like stick. Yeah, you see them. There's nothing to hide because they feel they have the power. They cannot be feared. So they show themselves. They are known. But for 100,000 millions years, women were afraid of men because of the power, muscle power, I mean. They beat them, they kill them.
And they still do.
They still do, especially in Turkey and like the countries like Turkey. And in a way, they fed them. Women couldn't go out, let me say, 70,000 years ago and hunt a huge animal. Men could do, and they feed the woman, especially when they have baby. They could beat her, torture her, kill her. So women, in a way, created some strategy to hide themselves, to protect themselves. And they have even some hidden language. They can understand each other, but men cannot understand them. Hmm. They say something means something. It's very tricky for a man. They especially hide their feminine ways because I don't know why, they are still afraid of it. They want to be ladylike. And in real life, they don't let you see the real face of them. Or they let one or two men or five, let's say, or 10, but not more. But in literature, I can tell you everything about her, every darkest part of her soul and body. So we see two different, maybe sometimes more than two different, five different personality in the same body, in the same soul. So I like literature. So I try to tell that kind of stories, the realities about human beings. When I say human being, I mean woman and men, human beings and men. So I don't call it noir. Yes, it's in a way, there's some situation in the one killing and, you know the murderer.
And the structure is great because you have the murderer right at the very beginning. You know what's happened. Yes. A crime's been committed and all of that is laid out in front of you. And the rest of the book is just finding out why.
Really? Why and who?
And how.
And who?
Yeah.
Who was killed?
Yeah. And it's full of secrets, isn't it?
Yes. The life is full of secrets. I love the, mankind will never find out the secrets. Every time they find one, solve one secret, they will have another. That's the secret of life. Mm. Secrets are the secret of life. You cannot solve them. You cannot solve them. There will be always something to solve. So I love that word secret for literature. The life has a lot of secrets. People have a lot of secrets. And it's our job as writers try to show that secrets to the reader. There are secrets. And I like to say, you have a secret. And I know what your secret is.
And there's a lot of that in the book. Now, it's also a love story, and it's not just a love story between men and women. There's also a love of the land, of the country that comes through. But you've been very non-specific. We know it's Turkey, but that's not particularly apparent.
Yeah, because I like that it might be somewhere else. Mm. I like you feel as if it's in England or in Italy or in France. So it's just the town with people, ambitious people, lovers, quarrels, political discussions, murders. Yeah, like life. It's a village, resembles to life, I think.
Now, this is the first time that one of your books has been translated into English, and it's been Alexander Dorr who's
yes.
the person who's done the translation. How difficult is it then to step back and see your own words in your own language now in a complete... I mean, do you read it in translation? And are you constantly going, well, that's not exactly what I meant?
No, I didn't read it. When I write a novel, I read once, I read twice, I read three times, four times. Then I decide it's okay. Then I'm done. I don't read what I wrote. I hate to read what I wrote. I'm always scared. I'm sure as soon as I start to read what I wrote, I will find some mistakes in it. So I don't read. And I didn't read the English, but they told me the translation is marvelous. He did a good job, Alex. But no, I didn't even ask him what he was doing. He just translated and sent it to the publisher, and they read it, they liked it, and they published it.
I wonder about your working process, because you've had this incredible career as a journalist and a broadcaster, but at the same time, you're producing these enormous books. How do you fit it all in? What is your process?
First of all, I wait for something, I don't know what. And one day, suddenly, I feel that urge to write. Then when I know that feeling, you know. When I feel that, I know it's the time. Like women, you know, giving birth. Take me to the hospital. Mm-hmm. It's something like that. Mm-hmm. You want to cry and you want to say, take me to my room. I go to my room, whatever hour is. Midnight, in the morning, it makes no difference. Then I start to write, and I write till I finish the book. Days, weeks, months, in the same room. I don't leave that room. I live in that room. I usually write 14 or 15 hours a day till I finish the book. I don't leave the room without finishing the book. So it took sometimes 5 months, sometimes 6 months, but every day from 8 o'clock in the morning till 11, 12, 14 or 15 hours writing. And that's the most beautiful part of my life. And I always feel that fear that I won't be able to write like that again. Every time I carry that fear with me. But the process itself, when I start to write, is one of the most beautiful two things. You know, the other one, one of them is writing. It's marvelous. It's marvelous when it comes, when I start to write. Now I'm waiting for another one to go to my room and try it.
Is there one in the pipeline?
Yes, I have two. And I don't know which one will come first. I'm not a man of thoughts, you know. I don't write my books with my thoughts. I don't think about them. I like the animals, with my instincts. I don't say I'm a good thinker or I think very well for the book. No, it's like, yeah, very natural. Like the animals, it comes with the instincts. I don't have maps or something. I don't write that the first chapter will be like, no, I don't like that. I just start to write, follow my instincts till it says it's done.
That's what's next for you, and perhaps a more difficult question, but what's next for Turkey?
It's a real hard question. I am usually an optimistic guy, but this time I'm a little bit pessimist about Turkey. Because we have a president who won't be a kind of dictator. And I'm afraid he can do everything. And he did a lot of things. Civil war is one of that bloody possibilities. The president really pushed hard for this kind of bloodshed. Because he doesn't feel safe and secure in a normal life. Because in normal life, you have law. And if you have law, law take you to the court and you will be tried about your things you did. So the president does not want a normalized Turkey because he does not want law. He does not want his colleagues be tired or put on court. So I'm afraid till he is pushed back to the certain point, Turkey will live a lot of problems. We haven't lived civil war in our history, but unfortunately now it's one of the options. I'm afraid of that. But I must say that the people of Turkey, 70 million people, has a kind of survival instinct. At the last moment, I don't know why they wait till the last moment, but at the last moment, suddenly they do something and change everything, and we have survived. But there's a question. There will be any new situation for Turks that they cannot survive. So I'm a little bit pessimist, and there's a very harsh pressure on press. Press cannot tell the truth to the people. They usually lie. And if they do not lie, they are fired. So we have problem now.
Do you see any hope for the future?
Yes. There's a bloody option, yes, it's true, but still I believe in Turkey.
Ahmet Altan, thank you very much for coming on to speak to me. Endgame is published in English now, an international bestseller, a really fabulous book. Look out for the rest of his works. I hope those will be translated soon. Once you've read one, I'm quite sure that, like me, you'll want to read the rest too. Thank you.
Thank you, Georgina.
And that brings us to the end of the show, which was produced by Claire Urban with additional engineering from Sean Malervi. Do subscribe to Meet the Writers on SoundCloud so that you never miss an episode. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thanks for listening.